Yesterday, a group met here at the same time, same day that groups were meeting at over 350 Unitarian Universalist congregations to begin a climate justice revival, which will continue throughout the months and years to come. All issues were brought up because all issues are interconnected. Justice for all humans, sustainability for the planet. We focused locally and generated a list of the challenges we see, the challenges challenging realities and how intertwined they are. And then we started to look at what we could each do and do together to address them, to address some small part. The fact that there are so many issues, that the more you look at them together, the more there are. Racism and inequality, business incentives that reward the wrong kinds of behavior, profit seeking that's out of control, housing costs that are too high for almost everybody, and through it all, environmental destruction. The fact that there's so many makes it daunting, but also makes it promising, because when you see them all connected, you realize if you pull on just one of those strings, it'll affect other things as well. I have the great privilege, before I had the great privilege of meeting with this group of folks here yesterday, along with Reverend Kat, a couple weeks before that, I had the great privilege of seeing Jane Goodall speak in San Francisco. She has a program, one of my great heroes. She has a program called Roots and Shoots that she encourages especially young people to participate in wherever they are. And the principles are very simple: to look locally on your own or with a group of friends at the problems that you see and address them. They do not have to be environmental problems. She says, do something for people, do something for other animals, and do something for the environment. So, as she said from the stage, if you want to do something for people, do something for recent immigrants. She has a great faith, this great faith of love, this great faith that if you work on your piece, as you see it in your local community, it will all connect up. It can't help it. So work on what you are called to do, and great things will follow. So that's why we were thinking about climate justice, because justice, sustainability, caring, all of those values are intertwined. And I was thinking about the word fairness. The root of fair is beauty. What do we consider beautiful? And then it started to be about how people look. So there's fair hair, which once you think about that root, it's pretty weird. There was a time, right, where people said, oh, people with light skin and light hair are most beautiful. So we have the people with fair hair and skin, and then those other people whose skin is and hair are dark. And then, of course, it also means just. Fairness and justice. That to have true beauty means to live in justice, a situation of justice where things are fair. And I think that that is true for us. We don't feel comfortable or at home or happy or completely blessed by a community that is unjust, even when we're the ones who are supposedly benefiting from the injustice. We want everyone to have what they need. So in thinking about justice and where it all hooks up with these other issues, I thought of how early we learn, usually not with the word justice, with the word fairness, we learn about how to be fair. And there are two principles that we learn so early, usually we're in preschool when we start to practice these. And I want to focus on them through the rest of my time here this morning. One is clean up your own mess. Every little kid knows this. They might not always do it, just like the grown-ups. But they know that the way to be fair is if you spilled it, you cleaned it up. If you take it out, you put it away. Clean up your own mess. That's what's fair. And second, take your fair share. No more, no less. Just take what you're entitled to. Again, kids might want to take the biggest piece of cake, but they know that's not fair. They know that what's just is for everybody to get their fair share. You can hear right away the connection between this human justice, this justice fairness between us, and sustainability. Imagine if we all cleaned up our own mess and took just our fair share. Problem solved. Okay, well, but how do we get there? And you know, do they scale? I think they do. I think when we look at the clean up your own mess problem, it is no exaggeration that when we teach the kids in Sunday school, okay, before you go play, everybody come gather up the papers. Oh, can you pick that up? Can somebody bring the markers together and everything? When we do that, instead of just, oh, kids go play, and they leave the mess and the grown-ups clean it up, they are absorbing at a very early age something that they're going to need to sustain their lives on this planet. And we hope do a better job creating systems that work for the whole planet than their elders have done so far. They are learning, it doesn't just magically disappear, right? Now, somebody could do it for you as a favor. The teacher could say, ah, you know what? We're barely gonna have playtime today. I'll clean it up for you. And that makes it clear, like, there's a mess and I'm doing you a favor. Or, you know, we can pay somebody to do it for us. We can say, I know I make all this mess and I know how to clean it up, but I'm gonna pay somebody to do that because right now I'm really valuing my time more and I'd rather take this money and give it to them. And that works, that scales. If the person who does the cleaning up is paid a living wage, if they can really live on doing the work of cleaning up our mess, because otherwise, we're just passing the mess along, right? And that doesn't count as cleaning it up. I think it really works on a national, community, global scale as well. We're gonna look a little bit at that when we look at the tools. And then there's that matter of taking your fair share, of course. Isn't that really the at bottom what's going on in racial injustice as well? Some people saying, I need my people to have first pick, to be given the boosts, to get the benefits, and not have to share them equally with everybody. I cannot live like that. And so here's a whole group of people who don't actually get their fair share. And then the systems are in place, and people who aren't making that conscious decision at all just are born into a system that doesn't work. Which is why we pause and try to get conscious. So I mentioned these two principles, clean up your own mess and take only your fair share. Now I want to talk about two tools we have for actually making them the way we operate. Because if we look around the world at how we humans deal with each other and how we're dealing with the planet, clearly these two principles are not holding sway as well as they do in your average preschool classroom. So one of those tools is imagination, and that's why we talked all day yesterday and why everyone in the Climate Justice Revival is talking about reimagining together. We create the world that we want with our imaginations. It starts there. And we have this amazing ability as human beings to envision something and then make it so. And one of the forms of imagination that's most powerful with this is empathy, the ability to imagine what it's like to be someone else. So that's exactly why we don't feel like something can really be fair, can really be beautiful, if it's unjust. We know that a city that is perfectly pretty, that looks nice, that stays that way because all its dirty processes happen somewhere else. Its power is generated in somebody else's backyard. The paper and cloth that it uses and all the materials that it needs to make a city are generated where they will pollute somebody else. It takes its trash and sends them down the river or to a river in a foreign country where they sit because there's no way to recycle them. We would not feel that that was really a beautiful community. We would see the surface and see that underneath it's just moving ugliness elsewhere. We can do that because we can empathize. We can imagine, what's it like to live by that river where all the computer parts pile up? What is it like to live where the medical waste is burned or the paper is manufactured? And we're able to empathize as well with people who don't live yet, with the future, the people who want to have a world as fair as ours is right now. So empathy is really powerful, and imagination is really powerful, but maybe I am a little bit in a cynical mood because I'm thinking it hasn't quite fixed the system. We have all that, but we haven't found a way to operationalize our empathy so that despite our best intentions, we have a system that is not fair in either sense of the word. A world that is not fair nor sustainable. So here's tool number two, because there's a tool specifically for looking at what happens when the intentions of perhaps every single member of a community don't match up with what the community actually produces and how it lives, and that is systems thinking. Looking at things as a system. I'm not going to give like a whole crash course in systems thinking right this moment. But I want to give a couple of examples of very simple systems for each of these principles. First at the kid level and then how we might scale it up a little bit. So for kids, we have a way of putting into the system this principle of everybody cleans up their own mess. And that is, a really simple way is adults who've got some power to exert say, no recess until everybody cleans up. And they look around for anybody who's kind of just shirking and hoping everybody else will clean up and say, come on, put some stuff in the box, right? They teach that. Kids, if you have a rule, no play until you've cleaned up, that helps the system be one in which you clean up your own mess. For adults, the system has gotten away from us a little bit about this. In packaging, for example, it used to be more like that. And then it became very possible for manufacturers to pile on all sorts of packaging and send it along with the desired goods to the consumers, whether it's a retail outlet or whether it's directly to you via, you know, web shopping and so on. And then the consumer in our system is now responsible for dealing with the trash. And we have some ways of making sure that that's as far as it goes, right? We've put some things into the system. You are not allowed to take a big bag of your trash and put it on the highway, make it somebody else's problem. You have to clean it up yourself. You have to take it to the dump and recycling or pay somebody to do that. Okay, because we have disincentives. We've built into the system, oh, people might do that if it's the easiest thing to do, so we're gonna make it illegal, and great. What if we also made it that manufacturers can't send lots and lots of plastic and unusable, unrecyclable stuff? Yes, then we would all go like this. They're not being evil, right? They're just, the system is saying, hey, you are not responsible for this. And they're saying, fine, not our problem. They are not gonna do what's most recyclable. They're gonna do what's cheap and light for them. And so off it goes. And then it becomes somebody else's problem. And sometimes it becomes part of the product, right? I mean, have you thought about what's gonna happen to your car when it's time for it to not roll on the road anymore? It's made of all these plastics that aren't even recyclable and reusable in any way. What if the manufacturer had to be responsible for that? Then, that's just one of the possible solutions, right? One of the loops that could fix it. Then, manufacturers would say, oh, let me make plastics that are actually recyclable. Or maybe I won't put so many plastics in here. I'm gonna build this differently because I have to deal with it. And, you know, now, where exactly do these systems come from? They grow over time. I think a very plausible theory is that the whole system of getting cardboard boxes from, you know, giant retailers who shall remain unnamed was actually dreamed up by cats. It is a box delivery system for cats. So that those of us who have a box-loving cat at home actually are getting something useful in addition to the tiny little good that's in this big corner of this box, and all the plastic and styrofoam and all that kind of stuff. Those of us who do not have cats or whose cats inexplicably do not like sitting in boxes just have all this stuff to use. Okay, so obviously part of it is the cats who dominate the world. But a lot of it is also, the rest of it is unconscious humans. Humans just each following their own incentives, and this is why we have to look and say, how can we tweak the system? Because if everybody followed their own incentives, we might put our garbage on the highway, okay? And it would just be like, well, I could do that, or I could spend $25 to have somebody take it away every month. What am I gonna do? That's stupid. We just say, you can't. Here's your choices. Pay the $25 or face a great big fine, okay? And that's one way we tweak the system. Just like we say to the kids, clean up or, you know, stay here until you do. Okay, well now you've got a simple incentive. That's a really simple way of tweaking the system. But systems are complex and we can do it in a lot of different ways. How about that other one? Use your fair share. Okay. How do we do this with kids? If the kids have a cookie, two kids have a cookie, and you want them to split it in a way to have their each have their fair share, how do you do that? Anybody got a system for that? If you've been a parent or dealt with kids, you probably have a system for this. That is my favorite, most elegant solution to that problem. Sally has just said it. One cuts it and the other one chooses first which half they get. That is so much better than parent enforcing, right? And then they're both mad at you as well as at each other. And it uses everybody's self-interest. Again, people, you know, not to be cynical, just people do what makes sense to them. And what makes sense to a kid is get the biggest piece of cookie. You know, generally speaking, they might want to be nice to their sibling now and then, but generally speaking, they're not always going to be thinking about anything beyond how much cookie they want. So you use their self-interest. You divide, you choose. Boy, does that get it divided down the middle. How could we operationalize this out in the world of grown-up cause and effect? How could we make it that we all, whoever divides it up is not the person who then decides who gets what? Well, one issue we've decided on is, one system we've decided on is democracy. And to the extent that we have a truly democratic system where everybody gets to decide, we begin to approach the cookie system which the philosopher, the ethicist John Rawls, in his theory of justice, basically put into a thought experiment this way. I don't know if he thought of the cookies. I would have put the cookie in there if I were him. But here's something he did. He said, imagine that you don't know who you will be in this system. Imagine we're all living in the cabbage patch where babies live before they come to life in humanity. And you get to say, here's how I want this world system to be. Here's how I want goods to be divided. Here's how I want to decide who gets the nicest house and to live in a good town and to get good schools and to have the health care they need and to live in a beautiful green place and all those things. Here's how I'm going to decide. Okay. You can have all sorts of ways to do that, but there in the cabbage patch, you don't know. Are you going to be a man, a woman, a non-binary person? Are you going to live in this country or that country? What color is your skin going to be? How much money are your parents going to have? You don't know any of that. You are going to be plucked out and plopped somewhere in humanity. Now what system would you create? That is a way, in his thought experiment, to say, let's think, grown-ups, how do we want to divide it up, knowing we're not the ones who get to decide which piece we get? He says, when you do that, the system you create, that is a just system. That's a fair system. So run that through your mind. Now, we can't do that. We know where we're going to be, right? We can't pretend ignorance, although we can use our imaginations. But we can create systems. What is a system that would make these things fair? Here's something that kind of brings together these two principles, the use your fair share and clean up your mess system. Donella Meadows, a great systems thinker and teacher, talks about a water use system. A factory uses water, for example. They draw water through an intake tube from a river, and they dump wastewater into the river. If the wastewater output was upstream of the intake, we would have a system that rewarded, emphasized, encouraged good use of that water. But of course, we don't have that system. We could. And so the principle of use all the clean water you want and know that you're not going to be responsible for the dirty water, that's what we've put in place. I think one of the things that drives injustice, and that was underneath many of the things that we wrote up yesterday as our challenging realities, from income inequality to the expense of food and housing, from people migrating to get away from environmental disaster, to businesses doing nothing but seeking profit. Underlying a lot of them is scarcity. The idea of scarcity drives injustice. It's pretty easy to be fair about the cookies when you can have as many cookies as you want. It's when there's one cookie, one big cookie that you have to split with your sibling, that you have to really work. You really have to have a system to make it fair. So it isn't so much an objective reality, scarcity. It's not that we don't actually have enough. It's more a product of our systems. And when I look around the world and doubt that, and I think there just isn't enough to go around, I remember that in the entire history of the world, billions of years of living things on this planet, and the millions of years of human beings on this planet, it's balanced really well. Dynamically, there's a dynamic equilibrium, ebb and flow, but it has balanced. There has been enough. What we need has been balanced out, come around, you know, we get everything we need, and the earth can handle our waste, and it all works. So it's all worked up until the last few hundred years. That's why I think the scarcity is not actually in the facts, but in how we handle things. So how do we make sure that the things that are most important to us are not scarce, that they are distributed? So here's Dana Meadows again, Danella Meadows, also known as Dana. She says, no one can define or measure justice, democracy, security, freedom, truth, or love. But if no one speaks up for them, if systems aren't designed to produce them, if we don't speak about them and point toward their presence or absence, they will cease to exist. So again, the upside of that is it works the other way too. When we create a system and we say, actually, what we want this system to produce is justice, truth, love, security, freedom, then we can do that. Here's the key. Systems have their own kind of laws, and we're not very good at thinking unless we're Danella Meadows and learn from her and people like her. We're not very good about thinking about them. So you can't just say, oh, the goal of this system is to produce freedom and justice. You have to actually look, how's the system operating? How's the system operating? Is it delivering freedom and justice? Is it giving everybody enough? And is it making that everybody, everything on earth, including the generations to come? Is it a sustainable system? Not just do we want it to be, but is it? We have these tools. We have the little kid tools for how to do that, and we have big grown-up sophisticated tools of systems thought to say, what's actually happening in our system? Let's change it. Because, you know, unintended consequences are a really big part of any complicated system, like a planet or an economy, a community of any size. Oh, we didn't mean to pile up piles and piles of plastic that nobody knows what to deal with, but here we are. So let's change the system so that it operates on these simple, simple principles we've all known since we were tiny. So that it encourages everybody, makes it possible, makes it imperative to clean up our own messes. Not leave them for somebody else, a particular kind of person, or a person who's not yet born. And take only our fair share, each of us. No country gets more, no particular race gets more, no gender gets more, just everybody gets what they need. We really know how to do this. We've got the wisdom here in humanity, and as I'm reminded whenever I'm in a gathering and see that map of the 350 UU congregations, over a third of UU congregations doing this on this one weekend, I know we've got the will. May it be so.